like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And my guest today is Jason Meltzer, co-founder and chief dog officer of WAG, the on-demand dog walking app that provide owners with immediate access to experienced dog walkers and sitters that the company has selected, vetted, certified, and insured. Founded in 2015, WAG launched in such major cities as Los Angeles, New York, and San Francisco, and earlier this summer expanded its operation to 25 additional cities. WAG enables dog walkers to be booked with as little as 30 minutes notice, and walks can be tracked on users' phones by GPS in real time. We'll hear about how WAG got started, how it's developed, what you might expect as a customer, and more when I speak with Jason Meltzer in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll also speak with Jamie Katz, a Fort Lauderdale-based private investigator specializing in finding missing pets. Yes, she's a pet detective and a past guest on Talking Animals. Katz has become increasingly concerned about the way county code enforcement throughout Florida tends to remove lost pet signs not long after they're posted, which greatly reduces, of course, the prospects of all pet owners getting their missing pets back. Katz has started an online petition hoping a bill can be introduced in the next legislative session to remedy this problem. Right now, though, let's get to Jason Meltzer and WAG with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Jason Meltzer on Talking Animals. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Duncan, and good morning, Talking Animal fans.
Okay, well, I think that that covers most of it, I think, pretty well. Of course, we're here primarily to discuss WAG, and we will in just a few minutes. But because you're WAG's co-founder and chief dog officer, no less, and that company mutated in a sense from your own dog walking service called Surf Dog LA, all of which suggests you're a pretty serious dog guy. So let's find out a little bit more about you in that regard first. When did you first fall in love with dogs?
I've been a dog lover, I'm sure, like most of the other listeners out there, my whole life. Grew up with a family that always had multiple dogs, usually mutts, in the house. And I lived in Topanga Canyon, which is a rustic part of L.A. County where a lot of people have dogs. And there's tons of animals. There's horses. People have cats, tons of lizards. So I was the kid that was always, you know, running around the creek and, you know, finding animals and bringing home lizards and you know, always playing with my dogs. I was the kid who was, you know, sharing his ice cream on summer days with his dog as well. My parents would tell me to stop doing that. And that's kind of my, I guess, my origin of where my animal love came from.
And was there, probably the one you were sharing the ice cream was, but was there a special dog? It sounds like dogs were kind of a through line, multiple dogs even, as you were growing up in the family there. Was there a dog in particular that you just really had a bond, a special relationship with?
You know, like you said, like all of us pet owners, we have a special bond with all of our dogs, but I think the one that is the earliest memory was my dog Greystoke. He was a really interesting dog that was part Australian Shepherd mixed with Pit Bull, and I think he had some Lab as well. And he was just, you know, a wonderful dog, very loyal and like very great around all the kids. And, you know, he ended up having puppies, and we adopted one of those dogs as well named Shadow, so we kept that like bloodline in the family. But yeah, he was my first dog. I had a great dog named Kramer, who was like 140-pound beast of a dog that,
wow,
when people were working on the house, they would always give him their sandwiches because he had that really good puppy face still. Where
yeah.
He kind of had to.
And he had the girth to suggest, hey, I do need your sandwich if I'm going to keep this 140 pounds going. Yeah.
Exactly. He was a big guy. We lost him early, though, to Parvo, which was unfortunate. Then we had Samson, who was like a Rottweiler lab mix, and he was great. Just like really funny, characteristic dog. And now we have Cosmo, who's this beautiful half Siberian Husky albino German Shepherd mix, who, you know, looks like a dire wolf, and he's just like the most friendly and gentle dog. And my dad actually uses him as a therapy dog.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Okay, well, that's quite a history of dogs, and also, as you kind of suggested, quite a range. I mean, there's obviously whatever the next dog was just happened to be that dog without any regard, obviously, to breed, or it's just like, hey, this one, we like this one needs a home. Let's take home Kramer or Cosmo or Samson or whoever's next up, so...
That's right.
So how soon did this love of dogs and just the dogs that sort of ran throughout your formative years, obviously, propel a business interest? Like, were you the neighbor kid? You said already the kid that was sort of tending to animals, looking through the creek and whatever. But were you also the neighborhood kid who would walk the local dogs for a few bucks? Or when did this sort of begin?
Yeah, that, you know, I always had this entrepreneurial spirit. When I was running through the creek, we'd find my cool crystals and we'd sell those things. And my neighbor came to me. She needed a dog walker for her dog, who was actually my first dog, Gray Stokes' other pup litter. And it was a dog down the street. She was like, hey, would you walk my dog? I'll give you like $15 a day after school to walk your dog. And for me, I was in, you know, junior high. $15 was a pretty big deal every day.
For sure.
And I loved doing it. And this was early days where it wasn't very easy to find a dog walker, especially up in Topanga Canyon where there's no sidewalks. So yeah, it started there. And then other people in the neighborhood kind of caught on that I was able to do that. And I was home before most people from school, before most people got home from work. So I had a small book of clients.
No, that's great. So it just sort of expanded from when the first neighbor woman said, hey, would you want to do this? And you just kept adding them. How many, you're presumably still in junior high, how many dogs or clients did you have at that point?
It was just a couple. It didn't really last. Like when I went into high school, I had other responsibilities that came up. So, you know, it was just a few handful of customers who just lived on my block, on my street in Topanga.
But I think we may see the early seeds planted of later ventures. So with that in mind, in fact, talk a little bit about Surf Dog LA and what it is or was and how and when that got started.
Sure. Yeah. For me, Surf Dog was great. I had worked in Fortune 500 companies out of college, and but my calling was still telling me to come and work with dogs. Like, because in college, I was also kind of known as the dog guy, walking and sitting for my friends. And when I graduated college, I'd worked for a few years in Fortune 500 companies, and then I had this opportunity and like this calling to start my own dog walking business. I was sitting on Main Street in Santa Monica, and I was looking at all the dogs walking by, and I was like watching these dog walkers just like really like just enjoying the lifestyle they're in, and I was like, I've got to give this a shot. And so immediately I, you know, started up my business, and I got clients right away. I had no problem like walking up to people and kind of pitching them, you know, me and the service I was trying to deliver, which was, you know, the surf dog lifestyle business. And it was a hit. You know, within the first year, I had like 20 clients, and I had like three different dog walkers working for me. Got noticed. LA has this vote where they vote for the best dog walkers in the city, and I was mentioned as one of the top five. And then the following year, I had already, you know, almost doubled my business again, where I had close to 50 clients and like six dog walkers working for me, and again got listed as a top dog walker because I really wanted to keep that quality high. Lots of great clients, some celebrity clients, people, and it was a really wonderful, you know, mom and pop small business. And it was because of that like recognition and quality to custody and care of the pets that led to WAG. And my co-founder Joshua Vinner, you know, who comes from a tech background in Silicon Valley, when he had this concept of of a dog walking app, and he lived in L.A. at the time. He wanted to talk with someone who was the best, and he found me. And then, you know, we really kind of hit it from there with this vision of bringing dog walking and pet care to the mass.
Of course, we're going to explore that in some detail in just a moment. But just to back up for a sec, so sorry, what age did you launch Surf Dog L.A.?
I would say I was 27.
And when you talked about having worked prior to that for Fortune 500 companies, what sort of field or industry were you working in?
Sure. I was doing a lot of, started in the bottom when the recession first hit really hard. I had worked for magazine companies selling marketing ads and subscription ads. And then I started working for a software as a service company called Cision, which is like PR software. I was a Fortune 500 company, and then I was recruited to work for a startup that did digital postal mail. It really was trying to save the paper, or cut the paper industry down and reduce that by using digital postal mail instead. So I had learned a lot about sales and business development and marketing, and my background in college was in psychology and business. So I was shocked by when I started Surf Dog, how much of all of that became so pertinent to the business I was running.
Okay, so then you're 27, you've done all those things when you start Surf Dog. And so how long after Surf Dog, when it seems like it flourished from the get-go and you kept being recognized for having the top dog walking service in, the LA area, and then what's the chronology of when Joshua and you connected? And other than just what you being named as one of the top dog walking things, how did he find you, or how did he connect with you?
Yeah, so he connected with me. He just shot me a kind of a cold email to my business email. This was, I would say, around September of 2014.
Okay.
And we met at a coffee shop on Main Street in Santa Monica, for our first meeting, kind of discussed my business and the business I was hoping to create. It was interesting at that time. I had recently found out my fiance was pregnant. So, we were pretty excited to get that news. It kind of puts your business mind into full drive.
For sure.
I was thinking about, maybe franchising the business and expanding into, other cities, bringing Surf Dog, and it was perfect timing to meet Josh, who wanted to build an app that could service, the country.
So when you guys had that first meeting at that coffee shop there, September 2014, he already had in mind the app, or was he just saying, hey, there's something here, and meanwhile, this guy Jason already has a thriving dog walking business, so let's just get together, have coffee, and see what kind of comes to mind or what kind of clicks? Or was it more focused in that very first meeting that he said, hey, here's an idea I have, and it could kind of hook into what you do?
Yeah, it was kind of a combination of both. He wanted to kind of feel me out and see where my passion lies and what kind of, background I could bring to the table and where my vision was. And same thing, I was looking to meet him to make sure that, I could, understand more about what his vision was for this idea and that how we would do it, how we would launch it, and the plan for it. And we were both, from the beginning, clear that we wanted have an amazing service that provided extra care for animals, that would give back to the community. And for him personally, I think the driving factor was he really wanted a dog, but his family was hesitant because he was so busy. He's always starting companies that they weren't sure that he could care for. So he really wanted to have this service so that he could have a dog and feel like he's giving it the proper care that the dog needs.
So he was just guy starting businesses and keeping the long hours and stuff that typically goes with starting and running a business. Had he, I'm going to guess, at some point earlier in his life, he had been a dog guy, and then I guess his schedule and lifestyle sort of prevented him for a period of time from having a dog. Is that?
Yeah, I would say that's correct. He had definitely had family dogs in his past that were important to him. And if you look, we have really cute in the WAG app, we have these great characters, that stickers that you can share if you download the app, and all of us have dogs in there. You can see our president's dog Oliver is one of the stickers. You can see Josh's dog And then you can see Cosmo in there as well.
Well, that's something to look for. So before we go to much further, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Jason Meltzer, co-founder and chief dog officer of WAG, the on-demand dog walking and sitting app. If you'd like to ask Jason a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And should know we've already gotten a few texts and emails, and we're going to get to some of those in a moment. But okay, so he's saying, look, I'm doing all these businesses. That's great, but I'm swamped. I can't really have a dog. So part of the premise for what I'm meeting, talking with you about over this first coffee is for someone like me that's otherwise too busy to have a dog, if we have a simple way for people to get somebody to walk their dog when they are at the office, let's say, then someone like me can have a dog. Was he pretty much laying it out that explicitly?
Yeah. I mean, that was the underlying principle, was that we wanted to make pet ownership easier so we can get more dogs out of shelters, more dogs adopted, and we thought that a lot of people had the financial means to have pets, maybe more than one, sometimes are time-strapped. And WAG wants to be there to fit into your life schedule and provide that time and the care for your pet that they deserve.
And let me ask you this, Jason. So, because you, even when you're a middle school kid or junior high kid, you're walking dogs, and then you started the more official LA Surf Dog. So when you met with Josh, I'm sure what he proposed sounded like it made sense, and you were going to change your life with the fiance, kid on the way, etc. But to what extent was there trepidation nonetheless on your part about what you might be giving up or losing, in a sense, by Surf Dog either not necessarily going away, but sort of in a sense being absorbed into this new venture?
Yeah, no, it was a big risk. And we didn't really absorb. We decided from the early days, because we wanted to prove the concept that it was, you know, unhelped by Surf Dog. So we didn't, you know, absorb Surf Dog. Surf Dog remained in business for the first year or so after WAG was launched, because we wanted to have completely clean, pure data to return to, you know, investors and just make sure for ourselves that we had a good product. So it was really complicated. Like, I certainly was making a living on, you know, my Surf Dog business, and I have great employees there, and I had an amazing book of clients, and I'm so thankful for the people that were involved with Surf Dog LA. But I'm a bit of a risk taker, you know? I really saw the vision, and I knew that this was a service that people really need, and I had seen the impact I had on my customers' lives, you know, from busy mothers to, you know, executives and people who just, like, are traveling a lot that need services like Surf Dog and, like, WAG. So it was tough in the beginning when I had to put it all aside, and, you know, clearly in the beginning when it's a startup, no one's making any money.
Well, and also, too, if I follow you, in very early stages, when it makes sense that you wanted to just keep Surf Dog LA out of the new venture so that you really could have a clean slate and say, hey, this is what we've done, this is the kind of business we've done for investors, et cetera. But also, it occurs to me that while that's happening, then in a way, you were, I guess, necessarily kind of competing with yourself.
You know, we never saw it that way, and we still don't see WAG as a competitor with these small businesses, because a lot of the percentage of business that a small business does is recurring schedules and people who need dog walking by the same person at the same time at the same place. And the beauty of WAG for a lot of people is their schedules don't fit that way. And they need somebody on Wednesday, but they don't need somebody on Tuesday. And so on Thursday, I need 4 o'clock instead of 1 o'clock. So WAG gives you ultimate flexibility. And, you know, without the fact of the amazing, you know, leading technology that WAG brings with GPS tracking and pup reports that customers receive after every WAG walk, they can see, you know, what happened on the walk. We have a great emojis. You can see, like, where your dog went to the bathroom, as well as a note from the dog walker. So the technology was a huge advantage for the dog owners and dog custodians. And as I said, most of our customers want to use WAG for, more flexible schedule.
That makes sense. So when you were getting that together and launching it and formulating, I guess, a business plan with Josh, who that's a lot of what he had done and I guess continued probably to do, to what extent were you mindful of Rover, which has been around a number of years prior to WAG, certainly I guess would be considered a major player in this realm. What role did they play as far as you guys looking at the market and looking at the possibilities for this kind of business?
Yeah, I mean, we were really excited to see what Rover had, kind of got the ball rolling on in terms of a tech being merged with dog care services. But we really approached it very differently. We wanted WAG to be something that really focused on dog walking as the major driver of the business and as a major need for our customers. And we really focused, heavily early on in making sure that we got the right dog walkers on the platform. These are people who are vet technicians, people who've worked at rescues or at shelters, have had lifelong experience with animals, trained their own pets. So we really wanted to build this collection, this community of dog walkers who wanted to be a part of WAG.
It sounds like, by way of answering my question, you wanted to have WAG focus more really on walks and the flexibility of walks and the kind of reports that owners would get from those WAG walks, as opposed to sitting or doggy daycare, like you guys wanted to kind of really specialize in the walk. Do I have that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's where we want WAG to specialize. And we do offer boarding and sitting as well. Now it's a great business, and our customers, we really got into it because our customers were just asking us for boarding and sitting, once we started doing some dog walking for them.
Sure.
So that's where we initially pushed our plan, and that's why, you have me as a co-founder of the business. Our DNA is dog walking because that was my DNA.
Since you are a co-founder, and I've mentioned already a couple times that you're the chief dog officer, what does that title mean, and what responsibilities do you carry out as chief dog officer?
Sure, yeah, it's a great title. People always get a good chuckle out of it. It just means that we really want to mean the statement that we're here for the dog, and there's someone here constantly, with considering the safety and the joy that your pet's going to have on the walk. And I'm there to constantly remind everybody that, we're a dog walking company first, that we got to make sure everything that we design, that we develop, is with the pet and the pet owner in mind, as well as a dog walker. So this is the only business in this space where they have a former dog walker in an executive level.
Hence that title. Yeah, I got you. Okay. In a moment, I want to have you walk us through how it worked to book and carry out a walk. But let me just ask a few other things just to follow up getting started with Josh and stuff. So when exactly did WAG launch? When was the company official online?
Yeah, the company launched January 1 in the Apple App Store of 2015. And it was fantastic. We were really excited because we had customers from day one, people using the service. It was over the holidays, so we had some last minute, actually people needed some boarding and sitting last minute, so they were able to use WAG for that feature in the very early days even.
And what were the marketing efforts? How did people know to the very first day that you were up and running to book you? How had you gotten the word out on WAG leading up to that point?
Sure. So WAG actually started out of Josh's house in West Hollywood. It was the few of us by the kitchen table kind of, getting our onboarding procedure in place to find walkers, coming up with events and ideas to go out and find customers. So we were going to places like Runyon Canyon every single day with, little cards we wanted to hand out saying, a free walk if you redeem this card, letting people know, collecting emails, finding out, letting them know that there was a new service coming to town that offers Uber-style dog walking or on-demand type dog walking services. And so we just did it the very old-fashioned dog walker style.
Yeah, isn't it? It's kind of hilarious because it sounds like, as you're describing it, that it's very old, kind of old school, grassroots. But what you're doing as you kind of canvas in a grassroots way is a very high-tech thing.
Yeah, I mean, it worked phenomenally for us in the early days just to get our name out there, and they got to meet people face-to-face. We had a mascot. We had Josh or John, the president, would actually be in this dog costume, walking up to people. And we did our best to, in the early days, just get the word out as,
whatever
economically is possible.
Right. Well, and you can't go wrong with a guy in a dog costume. I mean, that's that's always going to be effective. So, Jason, what markets then? You went live January 1st, 2015. So what were the markets in the initial launch?
We initially launched just Los Angeles.
Okay.
You know, that was our home turf. That's where Surf Dog reigned. You know, we wanted to see if it was a good product market fit for Los Angelinos, and they loved it. A huge hit from the start.
So then where, in the next phase, then where did you widen out to from the Los Angeles base?
So once we, you know, had seen everything was working in L.A., and we needed to make a couple, you know, just tweaks and make sure everything was good to expand the service, we knew it was really important to see if it would work in the San Francisco Bay Area. That's where, you know, if you're a tech company, that's kind of like you're up against competitors, and
sure,
there's a lot of competition there. We launched in San Francisco, and just, you know, a few months after that, I believe it was like March or April of 2015, and we saw the same repeat success. And even at faster volume, it picked up faster than LA did. So some really good signs there. Once we had seen that, okay, great, this is working in LA, this is working in San Francisco, can this work in a major urban environment like a New York City? And knowing that New York is, you know, the Big Apple, we really wanted to test this in New York City. So a few months later, we kind of rallied everything. I moved out to New York for a few months and got the operation in order, met with a bunch of dog walkers, and we launched the product in New York. And again, it grew faster than the previous two cities, and it was a huge success right from launch.
So that was a little deeper into 2015 then, with San Francisco having been added in March or April. So this was what, a few months later, or?
Yeah, this was like I would say this was like October.
Okay. All right. Well, that must have been very encouraging. And then this summer, WAG announced a major expansion into some 25 additional cities or markets. So maybe you could name a few of those new markets.
Sure, yeah. I mean, WAG is now in 58 markets total, all the way, you know, the top 50, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Colorado, Tampa, Florida, Miami, Jacksonville. We're in Columbus, Ohio, Philadelphia. You know, all the major 50 metropolitan markets, we've launched there. And you know, people are very excited to have WAG in these markets. And we look for these dog-friendly environments and people who have, like, you know, cities like Tampa that have dog ice cream parlors and pet cafes. And we look for these kind of dog-centric cities, and there's a lot out there.
So it sounds like you feel like the expansion has gone well. I mean, sometimes a company like that can be a dicey phase in a new company's life, like expansion. And sometimes it goes great, and sometimes expansion totters the company a little bit because it was too fast or not quite the right area or whatever. But it sounds like you feel like now that you're in these 58 markets that it has worked.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's been great for WAG and great for our users and most importantly, great for the dogs and the dog walkers too. We get constant inbound emails and messaging like, you know, please come to Wichita, Kansas. Please come to all these areas and towns that people really want to walk dogs, and customers who really need help with their pet, and their local, you know, marketplace isn't providing the kind of care that WAG can offer with leading technology and, you know, a really amazing user experience where you feel like you're on the walk and you can book a walk from 1,000 miles away and people can still come and collect your dog and take him out and you feel like you're right there via the technology.
Cool. All right. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Jason Meltzer, co-founder and chief dog officer of WAG, the on-demand dog walking and sitting app, which has recently expanded into several new markets, as we just noted. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So let's get into a few of these texts and emails. One says, are there any health benefits to owning or walking a dog?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sure, there's health benefits to owning and walking a dog. You've got constant, you know, companionship. You know, I've done some research that says just like petting a dog can actually lower your blood pressure. So it provides, you know, great support for you. It's a wonderful addition to your family. And like anything else, the more you love something, the more like valued you feel as a person as well.
With that in mind, let's move to perhaps the most important question of all, which is how exactly does WAG work? Let's have a little guided tour. Let's say something happened and I unexpectedly need a dog walker this afternoon for our super sweet yellow lab, Daisy. So what steps would I take to get help from WAG with that walk this afternoon for Daisy?
Yeah. WAG would be happy to care for Daisy Duncan. It's really easy. You would download WAG on your smartphone in the App Store or Google Play Store.
Mm-hmm.
You could even go online to wagwalking.com and create an account that basically provides like your address, your phone number, your email. We want information on Daisy, you know, what she likes. Does she like being scratched behind the ears? You know, things that she doesn't like. Does she, you know, not like loud, does she not like bicycles, things that might trigger her, certain things about her health and her age. And then once you have that on file, every customer who comes gets a free WAG walk to try the service. So you can get your first walk for free, and you would open the home screen, and there's a button that says, you know, book your walk, and you could hit ASAP, which would get you a walker as soon as possible. And, you know, we try to have below a 30-minute approval time, so you can get someone there very quickly. Or if you just need a walk for later this afternoon, you know you're going out on a date or you got dinner, then you can schedule a walk for today at 6 p.m. And when the booking goes through, the walker is notified. They have information on like who Daisy is. They can read all of the comments that you left on, you know, how to enter the home, where her leash is, what kind of harness you use. And WAG also, one of the great features of WAG is we provide a free lockbox as well to put your keys in. And each lockbox has its own unique 3-digit or 4-digit code, depending on the box. And that way, when the walker arrives at your door, you get notified through the app that the walker has arrived. They can see the lockbox combination to get into the home, to get your key, take Daisy out. And along the walk, you can see, with GPS tracking, it's very, you know, accurate and live, where the walker's taking your dog, which I really like because you can say, you know, please make sure you stay off certain roads and make sure that, you know, the walker's following instructions. And when the dog goes to the bathroom, whether pee or poo, you actually get little, like, emojis that pop up and little sounds that come out of the app. So it's a really fun experience if you're ever, you know, on set and you get a little poop sound, you know, your dog went. And you get live video streams, too. It's an option of the walker. If Daisy's doing something really cute, like, you know, rubbing into some daisies along the walk, they can take a live camera shot and send that to you. If you're in the app at the time, you could actually view that. We call that our WAG cam. And when the walk is over, you get a report card that says, you know, some notes from the walker. You know, you can see how many miles and minutes the walk was, if she went to the bathroom. And we also have these really great filters. So, you know, you can get cute, you know, cover of the LA Times type pictures that you can share on social media of your dog, of Daisy on the walk.
I see. Breaking news. She went on a walk this afternoon. Excellent. So now let's say it's maybe not as urgent as the hypothetical that I set up for Daisy, but I have more time, or maybe it's tomorrow. And could I meet the prospective walker if there was the time? If it wasn't just like, hey, I need somebody right away, but like, hey, it is tomorrow or tomorrow night or whatever. How does that work if I just would feel more comfortable meeting the walker before they took my dog on their first walk?
Yeah, so certain walks, especially those that are more like weekly schedules, you understand if someone's coming on a weekly basis, you kind of want to have more familiarity with that person. You may want to show them more things in the house if they're coming there weekly. In that situation, meet and greets are available. But it's important to note that WAG, it was really important to us, to the founders when we started the company, that we had the best available pet sitters and dog walkers on the platform. So we thoroughly vet everyone. They take a long application online that's viewed with human eyes, each application. Again, we're looking for vet technicians, people who work at animal shelters or rescues, people with dog training background or lifelong pet owners. At that point, we background check and screen each and every walker to make sure there's no you know, criminal history or anything in their backgrounds. And we test them to see if they know how to put on common harnesses and that they can react to certain things in the field that they might come accustomed to. So we really focus on having the best quality walkers on the WAG app.
And then how, at the end of this walk, I get all this cool information and maybe a photo or even a video or whatever, certainly the report, and I know if Daisy went to the bathroom on this walk, etc. What does that walk cost me, and how do I pay?
Yeah, so the walk costs $20 for a half hour. If you want to do a one-hour dog walk, it's $30. We also offer walk extensions, which I believe are $10 to extend a one-hour walk.
Okay.
And which is really cool. You can extend the walk if you think your dog's having a good time. And payment is really easy. And that was another thing we really wanted to focus on when we developed WAG, was we want everything to just be super easy for the user to pay for the walk, to find the WAG walker, and to see what's happening on the walk. So once you put your credit card on file, one time, you don't need to put it there
again. I know you've said the emphasis for WAG really is the walking, but just for a moment, we're just sort of almost at the end of our time here, Jason, but let's talk just briefly, at least, about sitting or boarding. So how does that work? Let's say that I'm going away this weekend and my normal pet sitter is unavailable, sick, whatever. So how would that work?
So boarding and sitting is also found in the WAG app.
Okay.
And it's, again, a very simple way of scheduling the day and day of the week that you want pet sitting for. And it's, we have a great summer special at $49 a night, which I think is very competitive for most markets. And the walker would arrive there in the evening, spend time, take the dog out, and leave in the morning and give the dog, you can feed the dog or provide medications, whatever's necessary. Nightly instructions are for your pet, the pet sitter can do, and before they leave in the morning, they take them out for a potty break, and again, people can extend those into later time periods if they're not going to get home from the airport, and say till the evening, we could add on an additional WAG walk to the pet sitting as well.
I got you. So that's obviously at your house, or the client's house, in other words, and then are there possibilities for whatever, boarding elsewhere?
Yes, and yeah. What's really cool about, I think what's a great feature along with the WAG app, is if you are interested in boarding, then the walker will come to you, pick up your dog, and bring it back to their place where they, again, have the same type of care and treatment for your animal.
So basically all the info is on the app or just by going to wagwalking.com. So Jason, we have reached the end of our time here. So this has been Jason Meltzer from WAG, and again, the website wagwalking.com, or you can find the app wherever your smartphone apps are normally found. And Jason, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
It was my pleasure, Duncan. Thank you so much. Right. And I also really agree with your next guest petition. I think that's a wonderful cause that you're bringing out.
Well, good. That's one more signature, perhaps. Excellent. All right. Thanks.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. In a few moments, I'll speak with Jamie Katz about the online petition she has started seeking an arrangement whereby lost pet signs can be posted and kept up for a certain length of time in order for people to have the best prospect of finding their missing pet. She hopes this is a prelude to some legislator introducing a bill that would officially deal with this in the next legislative session. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece from Matt Bronger that I'm calling Owls Dalmatians in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Anyway, Harry Potter. I like them. I like the books. I like the movies. But I think they send the wrong message to our kids. And that's that it's okay to own an owl for a pet. No. Okay? I'm from Oregon. I know. Owls are made of claws, feathers, and hatred. That's it. Like, owls don't give a crap. You ever look at an owl, the rage and hatred in his eyes? Up in a tree, like, who? Who? Who's next to die? It's you, mouse. Ow! And I'm back, hating everything that lives. Hey. It's kind of like 101 Dalmatians. You remember when that movie came out and all the kids wanted Dalmatians for Christmas? Even though the Dalmatians are the most insane dog in dog land. They are. You throw a stick to a Dalmatian and come back with his own leg torn off. Yeah. Is that what you threw? I didn't even look. Ha ha! Dalmatian! They yell their own name like Geronimo.
That was Matt Bronger. We had a piece called Owls Dalmatians, taken from his debut appearance on Letterman a few years ago. Now on to my conversation with Jamie Katz about that online petition designed to help people get their missing pets back. So I'd like to welcome J. Jamie Katz back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Jamie.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You were a guest a year or so ago on the show, so maybe you could just briefly outline, because we don't have that many real-life pet detectives on the show, and probably most people would encounter. Maybe you could just briefly describe what Pet Detective does.
Sure. So I'm a private investigator, and I specialize in lost and missing stolen pets. When people's pets go missing, they call me, and I go over their case, and I come up with a logical explanation of what could have happened and how we can move their case forward in order to reunite them with their pet.
And so you use various means for that, right? You have access to databases as a licensed private eye and Google.
Yeah, I definitely do. And I also have two tracking dogs, Gable and Fletcher, that you met.
For sure. But also, whether it's a pet detective or just somebody two doors down that whose dog got out and is missing, I mean, an age-old thing that is critical no matter which scenario you're in is the signs like, hey, lost dog, lost pet, lost whatever, with the photo and the information. So really, signs are critical, it seems like, whether it's your case as a professional or, again, me
Absolutely.
So let's talk about code enforcement and what often happens to those signs, depending on where those signs are placed initially.
Sure. So if signs pretty much are illegal all over the country, but in Florida, we have a really big problem, especially in South Florida, with as soon as the signs get put up, they're immediately taken down. And when I mean put up, they're put up on public property. They're not supposed to be put up on public property, but when you have a frantic pet owner looking for their pet, they put the signs wherever they possibly can as quickly as they can in order to get information. So when that happens, their signs do get taken down immediately, and then we lose the chance of actually being able to recover that pet.
That is so critical, it seems like. And again, the kind of signs that you recommend that your clients use are obviously much better and much more visible and therefore typically much more effective than the kind of signs most of us have made on the fly with whatever we can cobble together. But either way, the same thing happens, whether it's a great professionally sign that you've kind of helped guide people to do or the sign that I might make this afternoon or whatever. So the point is they get torn down often. And then while you think, hey, hopefully we'll hear soon about the, spot or whatever that went missing yesterday, you're not going to hear because you're not going to get the help from those signs. So tell us a little bit about what, with that in mind, and your kind of concerns about that, what the petition is and what it seeks to do.
Sure. So what we're doing is I put a petition together for all of the state of Florida. And what we're trying to accomplish is to be able to post lost pet signs on public property. And we'd like to do it, in a way that it works for everybody, a timely manner, have a week or 2 week time limit, have an actual date that the sign went up on the actual sign, a date it needs to come down. And it's for not just, private investigators to post signs, but for people too who have lost pets. It's for anybody who has a lost pet should be able to purchase a permit and have a time limit and then have to take down their own signs that they put up themselves once the time limit is up. And that will give them the best chance in the world to be able to recover their pet.
And what sort of time limit do you propose? I mean, in your experience over these years of being a pet detective, most often, how quickly is that missing pet found?
I think 2 weeks is a good enough time.
Yeah.
I think 2 weeks is a good enough time to be able to get the awareness out there, to be able to gain information for sure.
Okay, so that's what this proposes. And so the idea is for people to hopefully sign the petition, which, by the way, last night I put on the Talking Animals Radio Show Facebook page, my personal page, the WMNF bulletin page. Where else could they find it, Jamie?
They can find it on my page, and it's actually been shared probably, I think, like 2,000 times now, so almost 2,000 signatures as well. And what I'm looking for is somebody to sponsor this bill. We still have a couple of representatives in the works, but we don't have anybody solid yet. So if somebody wants to sponsor this bill, that would be amazing.
So specifically, what the petition seeks to do is get this important information out, but hopefully lure a legislator into recognizing the problem and saying, okay, when the next legislative session starts up again in the first part of the year, I will sponsor a bill that tries to remedy this.
Yes, that's what the goal is right now.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Cool. So it sounds like you have a couple of people, legislator types that you've already been speaking with that may be interested in doing this, or is it still kind of...
Maybe. No, nothing solid.
Yeah.
Definitely still open to people if they want to help.
Right. So if people are listening and say, hey, well, and my representative is very animal friendly, might be really willing to do this. How might they get in touch with you if they have a suggestion or a recommendation of a legislator who might help in this regard?
Sure. They can contact me. They can call me at 844-411-5289. Again, 844-411-5289. They can go to my website at www.pijamiecast.com. They can email me through that, or they can reach me on Facebook, PI Jamie Cast, also Jamie Cast Pet Detective. So they can find me. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of.
Yeah, I think if anybody just puts it in any kind of search thing, PI Jamie Cats, the rest will take care of itself. There's,
definitely.
You know, they'll definitely end up in the right place. All right, well, Jamie, thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. Good luck with this, and we hope that people
Thank
will
you
sign
for helping the cause.
Absolutely, we hope people will sign the petition. But again, if they do have any ideas about a legislator who's really, really animal friendly, who might well get behind this, if you could make those suggestions to Jamie, that'd be fantastic. So thanks again, Jamie.
Thank you, Duncan. Have a great one.
You too.
Bye.
Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lowry and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint with Noah Lay. Then at 1 p.m., Craig Kopp and John Gilmore preside over executive session. Meanwhile, on this show is the prize for Name the Animal Tune. I'm just going to be digging out something cool from the Talking Animals vaults. We've got books, we got videos, we got DVDs, we got shirts. So it'll be something. We'll work it out. But let's, in fact, get into Name That Animal Tune, which again is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from us in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize, some sort of special goodie that I'll dig up for you. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Let's hope you can name that animal tune. We'll take your guests off air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laura is up next with Radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, August 23rd, when my guest will be photographer extraordinaire Joanne MacArthur, whose new book, Captive, explores the interaction between humans and animals in captivity. Meanwhile, please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and friend me personally if you can. It makes it even better to reach our info. And follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. All found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community conscious radio, homegrown, handpicked music and news. NPR News headlines are next, and then Rob with Radioactivity. Thanks.